Welcome to Minor Rex. My name is Dave. I'm here with Joel and Jamie and Tony, and we're here to talk about fandoms today. It's a little bit of a more broad, more general topic than we usually do. It's not going to focus on one work of art or one specific movie or book, but we're going to talk about the experience of enjoying things. Things like movies, things like books, things like sports teams, whatever you can imagine, there's probably a fandom out there, such as, you know, there's a lot of talk about Star Wars because Star Wars is coming out soon and we're super excited for that. But there's been a lot of talk about, you know, what's it like to be a fan of Star Wars in the modern day? Not like it was in the 70s or the 80s, but now with the internet and trailers and rumors every day about who's going to do what in this movie. What are some of the things you guys like or what are you into and what do you consider yourself a member of a fandom for?
I don't know. It's such a big topic. I'm a Nintendo fan. I'm trying to think of other like things I've dumped a lot of time. I'm definitely a Final Fantasy fan.
Oh, okay.
That's a thing.
Drill
really
it down
into
a little bit. Sure.
Yeah, which is a Nintendo game, but it's also other games. I don't know. I'm trying to think of other things I'm fans of. Like, I'm gradually getting through the Harry Potter books, and I say getting through, but I'm finally getting to the point where I'm becoming a fan of them.
Wait, for the first time you're reading them?
Yes. Yeah.
What?
I know.
Where were you, like, 15
I missed
years
the train
ago.
On that. I also wasn't that strong of a reader,
okay.
But yeah, that's part of it.
He wasn't able to find the stop at the 9 3/4 platform.
I think
miss the train is a good, well, first it's funny, but second it's appropriate. Like those started coming out like when I was late high school, early college. Mm-hmm. And so I've kind of like I'm 2 years too old to have gotten in on the ground floor of Harry Potter. Mm-hmm. I remember I read the third book when I had graduated college already, so early 2000s. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, this is kind of cool. But, you know, it didn't grab me the way things when I was a child grabbed me, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and we've talked on the podcast about Lord of the Rings before. I'm definitely a Lord of the Rings fan, and I forced myself to become a stronger reader when those movies came out, and I was motivated to read the books. Mm-hmm. So it's like, I guess there wasn't the equivalent. I wasn't like so moved by the Harry Potter movies that I had to read the books.
Yeah.
And, but I bring up Harry Potter for a very there was a recent blog post on the DPL blog about the Friends of the Library. And I just thought Harry Potter is a great story because it includes characters from all ages and backgrounds. And like you can cosplay, you know, anyone can cosplay as a,
somebody,
you know, professor at Hogwarts, you know, so.
Any species, any, you know, whatever you want to do.
Yeah.
When you think about being fans of those things, do you feel that you have to be, like, in community with other fans? Or have you liked them, like, in an isolated, this is something that you like a lot? Or do you feel like you have connections to the other fans of those things?
I think that's part of what makes you a fan in a lot of senses. Like, if you can find others to enjoy it with, that is a huge part of being a fan, I think. Being able to share that experience, even if it's, like, you know, I spent a lot of time with, like, Warhammer figurines. And, you know, it's nice to find other people that know what I'm talking about if I say Dark Eldar Army or something like that, you know. I think it's also the amount of time you spend on it on your own, but I think it's also that time you spend becomes more valuable when you find like-minded people that will share, you know, experiences with you. But
I agree with that. I think there's another layer to it, which is expression is when it becomes more of a fandom than just a fan. Like, I'm a fan of Breaking Bad. I think it's the best show ever made. But I've never cosplayed as a character from Breaking Bad. I've never written fan fiction. You know, I've never gone to a Breaking Bad convention. I'm just a fan of Breaking Bad. Mm-hmm. But other things, I've gone to conventions. I've cosplayed before. I've made funny pictures, little memes that I've shared with my friends on the group chat and things like that. So, like, when I start creating things around this other thing, I think that's, like, I've crossed a line into, like, I am now part of the fandom. I'm part of the experience.
Like, you're building the world of
it.
Like, the world
adding
of the fandom.
To it, like,
yeah.
The world's a little richer because of my one little picture is maybe a bit grandiose. But I think, a big part of fandom is that now I've put something out there as well, which is up for judgment and derision or applause or whatever, however good or important or how much work I've put into it may draw.
I feel that there's like a language to like a connection we were talking about before, but being a fan of like a sports team, you can walk up to anybody in the stadium before the game or whatnot, or like you sit near someone in batting practice and develop a conversation just based on, I can't believe the third baseman is not doing as well this year or whatever. And you get to know the person through that shared language of the fan but it's not really contributing anything specific, but you're actually putting yourself out there for that, like that one person to interact with or group of people.
I have an experience with that where I'm upset that I have to say this out loud, but when Michigan lost to Appalachian State, I decided I was going to wear Michigan shirts and sweatshirts all week. I was not going to back down. I was going to be like, I'm still proud of my team. People in the street had something to say to me about my football team.
Yeah.
People stopped me in the parking lot of Walgreens and say, boy, what's it like wearing that shirt? Or, boy, what do you think happened? Or, you know, is Appalachian State really that good? Is Michigan really that bad? And I'm interacting with people like on the street, on the sidewalk, in the parking lot that I would have otherwise never spoken to. We would have walked right past each other. But, you know, I expressed my fandom through my sweatshirt, and all of a sudden I'm connecting with people who, you know, maybe I didn't get to know their name or anything, but obviously it struck a chord with me if I remember these conversations to this day.
I collect sports teams, T-shirts and stuff like that, and it doesn't fail. I remember being in New Orleans and getting stopped by someone, hey, are you really a Brewers fan? And you know, I am, but not maybe as big of a fan as other teams. And but it was just kind of funny because if I wear like a University of Minnesota T-shirt in Virginia, someone's going to stop me. It just seems that there's always someone talking to you based on that. But it also extends to a superstition part of that too, where like I'll try to wear a Philadelphia Eagles T-shirt on a day that they play. And then if they didn't win that week, I think to myself, okay, well, don't wear that next week.
Or,
you know, you can't wear that in combination with X. Or if they win, you're like, oh, I got to remember this, because that's on, like, on an individual level of just developing your own personal relationship with that. But going back to Harry Potter, I went to, and I know that we've mentioned Pottermore before on this podcast, and I did go to that, and I remember I went through to find out what house I am in. And I remember definitely feeling crushed because I was a Slytherin. And I'm like, what does that mean? And it took me a lot to wrestle through that. And now I kind of like it because really a whole lot of other people are Slytherin. And I get a lot of free stuff from people who are like, oh, I don't want this. Do you want this Slytherin thing?
I'm
like,
yes.
So,
yeah, I advertise it on Slytherin on my Facebook page. I mean, I'm proud of it.
Both of you two would not strike me as Slytherins.
So are you Slytherin? Like,
yes.
I did not know that.
Yeah,
all that's right.
True.
And there's like a definite culture here at this library of like everybody, there's a few people who know they're in different houses and stuff like that. And it's kind of fun to interact with people regarding that. Is that?
Yeah. I remember when Pottermore came out, I remember thinking when I was taking the test, I was like, okay, this is the internet's official test because J.K. Rowling signed off on it. You know, the rest of the whatever, the precursor to BuzzFeed quizzes, it was always like, what are your favorite colors? And then they would just be like all the house colors. So obviously you can like game your way into getting whatever house you're in. So my sisters and I all took the test, and I was in Hufflepuff, and they were both in Ravenclaw. And I remember being devastated and angry because I was a Hufflepuff because we had all idealize ourselves as being Ravenclaws. And then when I went into the platform and, you know, there's like the forums for your house or whatever, everyone in Hufflepuff was just angry about being in Hufflepuff. I remember it was just like we were a house of like people in despair. No one wanted to be there. You know, there was no Hufflepuff pride yet or, you know, no like outsiders or whatever. No, everyone was just upset. So, but I do remember feeling like internally very devastated about it because Harry Potter was, I think, my greatest fandom that I participated in growing up. And I think because I did peak at the exact right time. When the seventh book came out, I had just finished high school. So we had kind of, I felt like, aged together I'd hit like all the, my age was always roughly within whatever Harry's age was in the books. So my sisters and I ordered the seventh book ahead of time. So it was delivered on that day. And my sister and I stayed up all night reading the book together on the couch. And because we didn't want one of us to cry or something or give anything away, we each made sure that we didn't turn the page before the next person. Wow. So we said turn, and then we could both turn the page. So we read the whole book together, sitting next to each other in my grandma's living room. Because we were on vacation. We were in my grandma's in California. Everyone else is doing other stuff. We spent the whole day and the whole night just reading this book and not turning the page until the next person did. Because, you know, it's that idea of like this community. My sister and I wanted to experience the world at the exact same time.
Yeah. Is it the only time you've ever read a book with other people that...
Yeah, at the same exact time, yeah. Because we knew everything was going to be so explosive. I didn't want her to, like, we wouldn't be able to keep it in. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's a really interesting story.
That is amazing. I don't want to...
We're all trying to figure out how we can possibly follow
it. Well, I mean, Harry Potter happens to be probably one of the books that I regularly, like when my wife and me are hanging out, one of us will read out loud and, aww, you know, and it's like, you know, back and forth. And it's, mm-hmm, an awesome book for that, like sharing the experience. So I don't know. I think the reason I'm reading it is definitely my wife. So it's like, mm-hmm, I can easily share that on the podcast and, mm-hmm, just say, it's like, it's amazing how something is affecting so many people and, yeah, it's like, but in these individual ways. And I think that's the very least. I didn't know that. I bet none of you guys knew I was going to, you know, immediately bring up Harry Potter, but no, we ended up talking about it for a large part of our fandom podcast. So.
And it's interesting to me how it's still relatively relevant, you know, that there's still kids learning about it for the first time. Yeah. My niece had a Harry Potter birthday party. She's obsessed with it. And so I can't wait till my daughter's old enough for me to read it to her too. So I think it's really cool that the book is still in the culture. And, you know, those Fantastic Beasts movies are still coming out. So there's still, like, Harry Potter world things still, mm-hmm, happening.
It's still an evolving landscape. And it'll, mm-hmm, that'll actually bring me back to Star Wars, because I think that was probably one of my earliest experiences with just a fandom that I almost learned more about Star Wars through, like, Star Wars RPG than I did about from the movies.
Sure.
I mean, the movies were something that obviously I was born while they were probably already all out. So it was something that I had to gradually, like, become familiar with in this weird hodgepodge order, you know, mix, mm-hmm, and match. Like, I remember we used to just call Empire Strikes Back Hoth because it was the one that started in the ice planet.
And, sure.
Yeah, I don't even know that I remembered much after the ice planet since.
I remember my brother and I had watched Star Wars when it aired on TV for the first time. That's how we first saw it. And we were super excited. And my parents are like, oh, there's a second one. It's called Return of the Jedi. And so we went to the video rental store to check out Return of the Jedi. And my dad's like, yeah, they want to see the second one. And the guy's like, hold on. That's the third one. There's another second one. And I wonder this day what my life had been like had I not seen Empire in order. Mm-hmm. If that guy hadn't shared with us, if he had just been like, sure, whatever, get out of my store. But instead he was like, no, you should have the correct experience. You should see the movies in order. Mm-hmm. And thank you to that guy, whoever it was, that bailed us out a long time ago.
Well, really, and that's part of our job description, yeah, here at the library. We've done that for enough, mm-hmm, people, both for Star Wars and for Lord of the Rings and for, you know, Hold
Fast
On.
And the Furious, mm-hmm, right, is the one that I get a lot.
Right,
which,
right,
one's the fourth one? Mm-hmm.
I have to look it up every single time because, yeah, they all sound the same.
I know them now. I got them.
Why can't you just put the number in each one of the titles?
They started doing that at the end.
Now. Okay.
Fast now. Five. Okay. Yeah. The Six. I remember having, can we do Return of the King and, mm-hmm, then the Two Towers? And I had the same, like.
Yeah. No, absolutely not.
Hold on. Let me just respectfully correct you here. I remember watching Star Wars. My uncle and aunt, who didn't have kids, but they did have a VCR, which, mm-hmm, is big news,
yeah,
when I was 5 years old. And I had this sublime experience of being in a room watching Star Wars by myself. And now I realize, like, they just, like, parked me there to to do whatever. Like, oh, let's have the TV watch a kid. But I would watch Star Wars over and over on that VCR. Mm-hmm. And then by the time Return of the Jedi, I remember standing in line to go see that, mm-hmm, at the Eric Movie Theater in Allentown, Pennsylvania. It's like one of those moments that are frozen in your head. Mm-hmm. I don't really remember much about that experience so much. I remember the movie theater and the line standing.
Yeah.
But that's also where I saw Temple of Doom when my parents thought we were watching The Natural. We were actually in the wrong movie theater. So
good deal.
So that was another really interesting experience. But nowadays, like, I'm not really involved online, mm-hmm, with a lot of these, mm-hmm, things. I don't really have a lot of passion for... As much passion, like if X-Files had come out 10 years later, I was a huge X-Files fan, and I did have, like, just the raw, white-hot, inchoate passion, mm-hmm, to write about or whatever and discuss, but there was nobody to discuss it with because, mm-hmm, I mean, the people I worked with at the movie theater, that's great, but who else, you know? Mm-hmm. And the internet wasn't really that much of a thing in the early 90s.
Mm-hmm.
It was just before that. So it was... I kind of regret, maybe, because I feel like I've missed out, mm-hmm, on the one experience I'd be really passionate about. Mm-hmm. But now the stuff I am passionate about, I interact with it through TV. You know, like I'm a sports fan, I'll like cheer for my team. Mm-hmm. But other than that, I don't really go online. Is being online communication, is that part of the fandom? Like, is that like a definitive fandom?
I don't think it's definitive, but it's definitely a strong component of it mm-hmm. in the modern day because mm-hmm. there's a lot of also like seeking out people who are also interested in this thing, but also there's a lot of seeking out people who have your opinion about mm-hmm. this thing. There's a lot of that. I'm mad about this. I'm mad about The Last Jedi, for example, and I want to go watch YouTube videos of other dudes who are mad about The Last Jedi, right? So there's a lot of that going on, which can be both good and bad, right? It can be bad if you're reinforcing your anger. That's just a bad idea. Mm-hmm. You just shouldn't do that.
Right.
And some people, you know, willingly seek out ways to do that, and that's unfortunate. But in other ways, it's great. Things like I was a big fan in the early internet, we can say, before YouTube, I was a big fan of the Mother series, Earthbound, for Nintendo. And they had a website, which still exists, called Starmen.net. And they would have a forum, which was great, but they'd also have like, hey, I drew a picture of my favorite character. Here it is. And people were like, oh, that's awesome. I love this. And then there was a lot of those experiences where not only can you talk about a thing, but if you drew a picture, everyone could see it, right? Mm-hmm. Kind of everyone in your little fandom could get together and see it and experience it together. And, you know, I would have a folder on my desktop where I would be like, oh, I got to save that one because that one's really good. It was another level of interaction with the property.
Yeah, and for me, that was MuggleNet in the early 2000s, which was obviously a Harry Potter fan site. And it was started by a 12-year-old homeschooled boy, actually. And I remember I met him in Oak Park, where they made this fake Diagon Alley when the fifth book was coming out in 2003. And I met this owner who was probably older than I was at that time, like an older teen. And I felt like I was meeting a star, even though he just mm-hmm. like made this website, because I was like, he brought us all together. Mm-hmm. He has, you know, we probably didn't call them podcasts back then, but whatever, you know, he had some like audio show that he streamed, and I felt like I was like one step closer. Because right now with Twitter, I feel like, you know, you can get up to date things from like the creators and people who are actually in the creation process yeah. of it. But back then we couldn't really. Oh, it was like yeah. press releases, stuff like that. So I had no dream of ever hearing what J.K. Rowling was saying like at that time. You mm-hmm. know, the community was all just with peers who were, you know, almost all anonymous. And there was a creation factor in that too. Everyone always created these like desktop wallpapers back then in PaintShop Pro or whatever, yeah. you know, cheap version of Photoshop. So it was a lot of like making our own websites on GeoCities and stuff like that. So I felt like that was the part where I felt like, oh, this is my place. And we would often talk about stuff that had nothing to do with Harry Potter at all. It was just like you found each other because of this community. But then we talked about like what it's like being, you know, like a 14-year-old girl. So
it's like your foundation
yeah.
and you just built off of that.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
But yeah, I don't feel like I'm in deep fandom now because like I don't go on Reddit really, or I don't really go on Twitter that much either. And I feel like those two spheres are so into mm-hmm.
Reddit
deep
especially.
In there. Yeah.
Like I think
yeah.
Reddit is built on fandoms. Mm-hmm. It's like, what is your fandom? Come interact with it. And for good and for bad, some subreddits have been very positive and some have been very negative and some have been mixes of both, and you never know. It's kind of like they got a bunch of people together that were all like this one topic and then let it mutate however it did. And so these days, if you go into a subreddit, you kind of don't know what you're getting yourself mm-hmm. into. It's not just like, oh boy, all these people will be fans. Mm-hmm. Like yeah. if I can give examples, the college football subreddit is very cool. They're fun. They're nice. They're smart. It's great. The wrestling subreddit, not so much. Like, they have strong opinions about this is terrible. No, that's terrible. No, you're terrible. And it's not a fun place to go most of the time because they've kind of built their identity around making fun of the product, whereas the college football subreddit has built an identity around celebrating and promoting the product.
So do you think that ethos of each of those subreddits started from like whoever created it and then it built up, or does that intrinsically have to do with the creation, like with college?
I think there's a lot of subtleties to mm-hmm. it. I do think mods can have an effect on mm-hmm. a subreddit. there was a Warhammer subreddit that people had to flee because the mod was just a jerk and promoted negative threads over positive threads. Mm-hmm. That just because, and he's like, I run this show. What do you want? This is my subreddit. So people mm-hmm. like made their own and went to a different one. So mm-hmm. it can be a lot of things. It can be the product itself. It can be the people that happen to be strong posters. It could be the mods. It could be, who knows, any number of little things that affect how a community grows over time.
Mm-hmm. Well, that kind of reminds me of like fantasy sports too, is almost like kind of a fandom of the sport, you know, because you share and like you're all aware of the players and you talk about, oh, I can't believe this guy is injured, or, you mm-hmm. know, you make jokes about what's going to happen. But the commissioner, the guy in charge of the league, it's kind of like the moderator, and
sure.
and he or she can really define the personality mm-hmm. of that league.
Yeah, set the tone for everyone else.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's pretty interesting how that can happen in mm-hmm. an online experience. Same as in an in-group experience, mm-hmm. but that is a critical aspect when you're looking at, you know, if it's smaller, it's going to be more effective, where if it's larger, like in a larger sphere, it may have a lot of more naysayers against the way that, you know, you want the personalities being driven, I mm-hmm. guess.
Mm-hmm. I also feel a particular loyalty or responsibility to my fandoms in funny ways. Like, I've been thinking a lot about this, and I think I'm ready to say, after all this time and all these years, not a big fan of Star Trek. Now, my teenage self would be shocked and furious with my modern self for saying that. But I think at the time I was a really big fan of The Next Generation. That's what mm-hmm. I was watching on TV. And I'm still a big fan of The Next Generation. And then I'm like, oh, I must be a Star Trek fan. I must like all things Star Trek. And it took me this long to figure out, maybe I'm not. Maybe I can let those things go. And I can enjoy what I enjoyed, mm-hmm. and that was a good time. But I don't have to watch Discovery, do I? Like, right. No. No, you don't. Like, you can watch what you want, and you can have opinions that run counter to it. You can like things, and you can not like things. And when you're deep into fandom, it feels like you can't. It feels like I have to like everything. I have to buy everything because right. I have to support.
The pressure.
Yeah.
Or if you feel betrayed by something that happens, sure. then you have to vocally say that.
Mm-hmm. Or like burn all your Team Edward or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. But
pictures.
Yeah, maybe we don't. Maybe we don't have to take it that seriously.
Yeah.
Maybe it feels that way, but in reality it's not really that important as it feels at the time.
It's like a favorite musical group when they come through and you really enjoy their music and you know they're playing at the United Center and you feel this like pull
mm-hmm. yeah.
to go there, but then you just feel like you're not that much of a fan mm-hmm. if you don't go, like you are
right,
beneath like everyone who does go.
Someone's going to find out somehow.
Right.
Call you on it someday.
Right, and say you are not.
Yeah.
And that's a shame.
And not mm-hmm. in any way real.
Right.
Yeah. I feel it's an imagined pressure.
Mm-hmm.
And then also with the internet, everything is being said before an audience and you're trying to get mm-hmm. upvotes or, you know, avoid sure. downvotes or get likes or whatever. So I feel like that does have this pressure to have the hottest take or the most extreme opinion in whatever too that can
there's a evolve. Lot of, yeah, there's, if you have the hottest take or a negative mm-hmm. take, mm-hmm. You're going to get more clicks than someone who is just like, yeah, it was fine. It's no big deal. Mm-hmm. Like they want controversy on YouTube. They want someone who is outraged and emotional and because that's expressive mm-hmm. as opposed to, yeah, I don't know. It was 3 stars out of 5. Like that's no fun. But on YouTube, you'll even get someone referred to it not too long ago in a video that I saw. Outrage merchants is what he used to describe these people on YouTube who are just like, I get paid to be mad and people come and watch my videos because I'm mad. And if I'm mad about A one week and I'm mad about B the next week, doesn't matter. Point is I'm mad and people like that.
Why do we like that?
I don't know.
Well, it's
but
a,
we do.
Is it cathartic? Is it?
It's a continuation of the Shock Jocks, mm-hmm. right? The radio shows mm-hmm. that
sure.
people would just like drop their mouths listening to. Mm-hmm. And they were, you would always be amazed what they're saying, and you listen every single time.
Mm. Yeah, you mentioned it as a way of self-expression, but it's funny because this is a different type of self-expression than the type you were talking about with fandom, where fandom is kind of this creative personal thing. Mm-hmm. This is like the outward expression that like, to me is like,
maybe that's the thing. Maybe it's not
catering
self.
To, yeah.
Yeah, it's not self-expression. It's mm-hmm. not, this is how I feel. This mm-hmm. is oh, I need to be angry about this, so I'll pretend like I think this. And that's different. That's wholly different from, you know, I love this thing so much I have to draw it, which is what a lot of early creative fandoms really felt like to me. It's just like I have to express myself, whereas this is different. This is
performative.
Yeah.
Well, it's like the late night shows too, like the Colbert Report. They're always giving the news in a funny way or a somewhat of a teardown way.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter what the news is about, it's going to get kind of ridiculed, I suppose. And it's the same way. It's not, oh, how are they going to react to this? It's, let me watch this because I know they're going to react in a specific way.
Sure. Yeah.
And it's just it happens to be a moving focus.
So it can be unfortunate. Fandoms can be toxic. Fandoms can be awful. We know some awful ones. I don't know. Like, it's become a thing now. Like, you could list your fandoms on a piece of paper. Like, I'm a fan of this and this and this. Like, I feel like it didn't feel that way so much 10 years ago, 20 years ago, where it's just like, oh, sure, I like that. I like this too. But now it's like, these are the ones that I'm serious about. These are the fandoms that I will fight for.
Allegiance.
Yeah.
Like, a much stronger part in your identity formation.
Yeah. Like, it's just another form of identity politics. Mm-hmm. But this time it's, you know, the art that you love.
But going back again, like, I'm trying to find experiences of fandom in decades before.
Sure.
And there have been people who have been tailgating at college football games for decades. And they get up at 4:30 in the morning and they tailgate themselves to pieces and then go to the game and then tailgate afterwards. And that's, to me, that's fandom. Mm-hmm. That's allegiance.
Back to Star Trek. The original Star Trek was canceled after two seasons and then a write-in campaign. People wrote letters.
That's awesome.
In the 60s, you know, this was before the internet. This was, you know, there were barely, I don't think there were conventions yet. I'm not sure. But people felt so strongly about that show that they wrote enough letters to CBS that they're like, all right, we'll do another season, which is happens all the time today with The Expanse, with Family Guy, with shows that are canceled and brought back.
Back then, I could understand it almost a little more. Nowadays, there's so much. There is an expanse of sci-fi and fantasy. Whatever, you know, there's always new shows being made. And I think the reason we have to pick and choose and be like stalwart in our defense of the things we like, it's like because there's so much. And those the things that we like are very unique. They are once in a lifetime things that we want to honor and cherish. And I think interestingly, like money doesn't always follow what people's hearts do, you know, and then things aren't remade or shows are canceled and we never end up with another Firefly season or anything like that. But I don't know. I think, yeah, the fact that there's just so much now, even if you're not a fan of it, you can know a show really well. I think that's part of it is people can have opinions about a lot of things almost like they're fans of it. But I don't know. They're not necessarily creators and they're not participators.
And maybe when there's so many more options, then you feel like each choice you're making is more part of your identity than when, you know, everyone had four channels or whatever. And, you know, you only listen to music on the radio. Then it was like everyone kind of had access to all this stuff.
Yeah.
But now with so much stuff, it feels like each choice you're making is a specific choice. It's not just whatever's on at 7 p.m. It's I'm choosing this. And then it seems more important, like part of who you are, maybe.
That's really interesting.
Also, like I'm choosing not to watch this.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, you know, I'm repudiating these other shows. And
so it's like reinforcing, like we're in a cycle.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense to me, is that, you know, shows used to be, oh, whatever's on 8 o'clock on a broadcast network is going to get 20, 30 million viewers because that's what's on. You know, these days, 20, 30 million viewers of a TV show is newsworthy. It's, you know, headlines. But, yeah, the idea that we kind of got to stick up for the little guy these days. It's like, I like this weird show on this weird channel, or I like this weird book that no one's heard of. And it's like, I have to help it because it deserves more than this. That's a weird perspective, but I definitely have had that.
That's the way I felt about the Blackhawks when I first moved out here. They weren't on TV and nobody liked them. And I felt like I had to be kind of like a Blackhawks missionary. And, you know, come on, you still have a hockey team. And then they drafted those two guys and then everything went north. But
did you know that there is Cain and Taves fan fiction out there? I've never read it, but I have heard there's like thriving communities of, and also like, you know, like where they're in relationships and things like that. There's just thriving shippers.
Yeah, that's right. Shipping hockey players. I never thought I'd hear that, but here we are.
So with your not so hot on Star Trek anymore, but you did like The Next Generation. Do you have any interest in the Picard show that they're doing?
I'm very much afraid of that show. I think it's going to ruin a lot of what made Next Generation good. I'll definitely pay CBS to watch it, I'll tell you that, because I have to know if it's good or bad or what it does and how it does it. Yeah, I'm nervous about that show. I'm nervous for my Star Trek.
Like, yeah.
Is this going to make Next Generation better or worse? I don't know. I'm scared. Like, my child's going on stage at a piano recital or something. I hope it does very well. I'm nervous about Picard.
It is brutal, man. Watching my kid up to bat in Little League, I'm in, like, pretzel knots.
Yeah, so you know.
So I agree with you. I like The Next Generation, and I think I understand what the love was for that, and not so much the other shows. They really don't hold.
Are they good? Other people like them for other reasons, and that's, like, I can be fine with that these days. I don't have to say, no, yours is worse, mine is better. Like,
yeah.
There was a time when I felt that way, but I don't have to feel that way anymore.
Right. And you don't have to let them know that, too. It's just, yeah.
Star Trek, I like certain shows, and I actually haven't seen Deep Space Nine all the way through, but that's one of the ones I'm, like, looking at going back and revisiting. I just feel like they're different shadows of the same. They're not any lesser or greater in my mind. I almost like them all. It's one of those things where, like, I had a professor who just hated Voyager, and I was like, I couldn't get behind that because it was, like, part of the reason I fell in love with Star Trek. So I can't, like, I can understand how, yes, it's frustrating and it's not the greatest series and there's a lot of loopholes and there's problems with it, but there's pieces of Star Trek that I just can't give up, and I'm like, I'm optimistic about Picard. That's the interesting thing. I'm probably one of the few or something. I mean, I'm sure there's other people that are just very excited about it, but I'm very optimistic about it because I'm just like, I just have this weird faith that they'll know magically like what I liked about Next Gen and they'll just translate it really well to 2020 or whatever.
Yeah, come in 3 months or something. January 2020, I believe.
Is that
2 or 3 months?
And Stewart's in that.
Patrick Stewart?
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. And a bunch of them. They're bringing back Jerry Ryan, 7 of 9, is going to be in that for some reason. Yeah, Brent Spiner is going to reprise his Data.
Hmm.
Yeah, no, I'm nervous. I'm scared. I hope it's good. And kind of opposite way about Star Wars 9, I kind of don't care about Star Wars 9. I felt 8 was such a great ending that I kind of don't.
It's like the epilogue.
Don't want more. I'm like, that was fine. We're done now, right? And then they're like, no, there's one more. I'm like, does there have to be? Does it have to be multiples of 3?
Right. I think the studio executives would say yes.
Yes.
Certainly, there has to be another one.
Certainly the accountants want a Star Wars 9. But,
well, 9 is such an even number, too.
Yeah. I'm actually looking forward, though, to not having those expectations of 9, to just go in and watch a movie and maybe it's a good time.
Yeah.
As opposed to, well, this better answer all these questions. I don't care anymore.
In my notes, I have for the first line, Star Wars, whatever happens, ...
Exactly right. I'm fine. If it's a good movie, that's great. If it's a bad movie, that's too bad. But I'm in it for just...
So you're like playing with the house money, right, at this point?
Like, yeah.
It ended well for you.
I've come all the way through to the other side where it's like, this movie can be whatever it wants, and I don't care. It's just more Star Wars, and hopefully that's good.
Yeah.
But it doesn't have to, oh, is it better or worse than the first 3 movies, or is it better or worse than the prequels? Ah, God, I don't care.
Right.
Like, whatever at this point.
That's like the opposite of how I feel about the Game of Thrones books, if they ever come out.
After
the Game of Thrones last season ended and I was dissatisfied with everything that happened, I was like, now I really need him to write it, to fix everything. Yeah. Otherwise, this is going to be the last thing I have in my head. This is going to become the canon, and I don't want it to be.
No. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I'm with you on that.
Yeah.
I'm with you there, too. Because it kind of started writing itself. That, to me, was like the end. I'm not like a complete believer of the TV series, but I didn't hate it as much as everybody else maybe just didn't like it. And I realized I was like tricked by my mind and I was like, wait, no, I didn't read this. This isn't actually the end. And so like I have to reserve the spot in my, you know, and to think that it could be finished as a book and as a series.
He's coming to speak at Chicago Humanities Festival soon. So I was like, I hope someone just like asks him, be like, why are you here? Why are you here? Go home. Go home and write your book.
Who wants to talk about the Jets defense?
That one I can't help you out with. Yeah, he needs to write. Rothfuss, too.
Yeah.
The both of them are going to conventions and having a good time.
Patrick Rothfuss, please write.
Please write that 3rd book.
Please.
Or you know what? A 4th if you have to. I don't care at this point. Like, yeah, I know, but you know, just whatever you need to do.
Yeah.
How long has it been since
the last one? It's been a while. Yeah.
Yeah, 8 years.
8 years, 10 years, something. I was thinking something like that.
Yeah.
2012.
That's what I was thinking.
2009 and 2012.
Yeah. Whatever year this is. Yeah.
So we're talking about Name of the Wind, of course, and the King Killer Chronicles. Mm-hmm. There's yet to be a king that's killed, so one would assume there's more story to be told.
But then again, Stephen R. Donaldson wrote two of the greatest series that I had ever read, The Ill-Earth War, and then the follow-up after that, with the name which escapes me. But he wrote those back in the 70s, and then he, between 2000 and 2010, he's like, you know what? I think I'm going to write a third trilogy about this. And I was so excited. I'm working in it. I was like primed. I loved it. I worked in a bookstore. I was waiting for it to come out. It was okay. Mm-hmm. It was okay. And then the second book came out and it was just a little bit less okay. And then the third one came out when I was working at a library and I still haven't read it. Mm-hmm. So that's like a sad ending, mm-hmm. right? To, yeah. But in a way, it's kind of like a pause. Like I'll get to it one of these days. Mm-hmm. But I will go back and read the first six books. Mm-hmm. And then maybe it'll give me enough running start into the last three to be able to bring it all together into a cohesiveness. But
that's what I feel with Netflix bringing back, or you know, other streaming services bringing back all these things like Arrested mm-hmm. Development and stuff like that. And then often they're not as good as the original and just leaves you with a bad taste in your mouth for the whole franchise or whatever.
Sure. Yeah. I went back and watched The X-Files mm-hmm. and 20 years later, it was pretty brutal.
Yeah. Well, we made it through the whole podcast without mentioning Marvel, and I think that's incredible somehow. But that's our podcast on fandoms. Love what you love and don't hate people for loving other things, I think is the message.
Exactly.
All right, and that's Minor X. We'll see you next time.